gentleman from Boston, Massachusetts, where the Massachusetts BioHeat Conference is being held today. Yesterday is kind of a prelude to this event. A meeting of soybean farmers and major home heating oil representatives was held. Massachusetts is the first state in the nation to enact a requirement that requires heating oil and diesel fuel to be blended with cleaner-burning, sustainable biodiesel and biofuels, with more states expected to enact similar laws this year and next. Leaders of the U.S. home heating oil industry, along with the National Biodiesel Board and the United Soybean Board, are here to announce a partnership that will mean more demand for biodiesel. With us on the teleconference today from here in Boston, I'll introduce our teleconference participants, and then we'll be opening the telephone lines for your questions. Just one reminder for those on the telephone to ask questions this morning, hit #0. And we do ask that before asking your question, if you would also give us your name and affiliation. Joining us on the teleconference this morning is Michael Ferrante. Let me spell Michael's last name. It's F-E-R-R-A-N-T-E. Michael is president of the Massachusetts Oil Heat Council. It's the state trade association representing over 300 retail and wholesale heating oil companies across the state, as well as over 6,000 licensed oil heating equipment technicians. The organization was established in 1955. Also joining us today, Joel Thorsrud. His last name is spelled T-H-O-R-S-R-U-D. Joel is a United Soybean Board Director and soybean farmer from Hillsboro, North Dakota. The USB and the Soybean Checkoff Boards fund much of the biodiesel and bioheat research and promotion in the United States. And also joining us this morning, Paul Nazaro, last name is spelled N-A-Z-Z-A-R-O. Paul is the National Biodiesel Board Petroleum Liaison. Those are the representatives that we have with us here this morning. We're going to ask each of them, beginning with Michael, to give us some brief opening comments, and then we'll open the phone lines for your questions. Michael?
Thank you so much, and welcome to our partners from the United Soybean Board and the National Biodiesel Board. I'm very proud today to be representing the oil heating industry and what I see as a sea change in our industry. We are an industry made up of small retail operations, about 7,000 operations across the U.S. We represent about an 8 billion gallon heating oil sales volume on an annual basis. So that opens up an entire new spectrum for bio-blending. The reason we are seeking a partnership with the National Biodiesel Board and the Soybean Board is that we would like to produce a cleaner-burning renewable fuel. There is no question that our fuel needs to be cleaner. We need to adapt to the environment that we are living under. That includes climate change legislation, a host of other issues, and the overall feeling in the U.S. and abroad that we should be reducing petroleum use. So by using a blend of biofuel, we can effectively reduce petroleum use here in Massachusetts and beyond and open up an entire new arena for our customers with a cleaner burning renewable fuel. So we look forward to the partnership. It is one that I think will grow over the next 12 to 24 months, and those synergies will start to increase. The Massachusetts mandate is not without its struggles and hurdles. We are working with state officials to iron out those difficulties, and I expect they will. At one point over the next 12 to 24 months, smooth out those details in terms of how we will implement a full mandate for both on-road diesel and home heating oil.
Joel? Okay. Thank you, and good morning to everyone. I'm really excited to be here. When I was a young farmer, I had a relative who was going to school here at Harvard, and invited me to come out and see Boston. He really enjoyed going to school here and wanted to show me around Boston. And here I am just 40 years later ready to see this place. But really what got me most excited is being here with representatives of the bioheat industry along with other state soybean board leaders, many of whom have been very instrumental in the soy biodiesel industry and getting it started. And also many other leaders here who will be looking at market expansion efforts in this relatively new emerging biodiesel industry or bioheat industry. The soybean checkoff believes we can really warm up the demand for soybean oil with this growing demand for bioheat. And the real reason for being here in Boston is to find ways that soybean farmers can collaborate to increase the demand for soy biodiesel blended with home heating oil to create what we call bioheat. We hope demand for bioheat can make the market for soybean oil a clean, non-toxic feedstock for biodiesel sizzle even more than it has the last 20 years. In our meeting with the bioheat industry yesterday, we found out the United States uses close to 8 billion gallons of heating oil annually. And even if we only have a B5 blend or 5% biodiesel, this could utilize nearly 450 million gallons of biodiesel annually. At the National Oil Heat Industry Policy Summit, the industry called for a requirement for transition from oil heat to bioheat. Massachusetts and Vermont are already on record to require the use of bioheat to reduce the carbon footprint and benefit cleaner air bioheat provides, all to meet bioheat demand. In East Central North Dakota, where I grew up, now it might seem like a long ways from Boston. Of course, it took me 40 years to get here, but we were a lot closer to these key markets in the United States than what I previously probably thought, and that can use soy-based bioheat. The soybean checkout looks forward to working with this important U.S. energy sector to reduce our petroleum dependence and increase soy biodiesel and bioheat demand all across the country. Soy biodiesel and bioheat represent homegrown, clean, renewable energy resource. There are soybeans. Let's put them to work for us.
Joel, thank you. Paul? Good morning. Paul Mazzaro, National Biodiesel Board. First, I want to thank all the state soybean associations, National Biodiesel Board, United States Soybean Board, for actually giving me the privilege to represent you all since 1996. It was a white canvas with no real pictures on it back then, but my vision was clear that I was going to take that fuel on your behalf and find a way to integrate it throughout the home heating oil and the diesel fuel community. Some 7 years ago, I focused on heating oil because I grew up in this business and I understood the deficiencies that this fuel heating oil has. And soybean oil was clearly an opportunity to integrate into heating oil, improve upon our characteristics of the fuel, and give rebirth to an industry that has not had change since coal was the primary choice of fuels. Then it went to heating oil. So the next evolution will be bioheat. And at our summit meeting yesterday, I mentioned this is just phase one of a soybean expansion into the Northeast Mid-Atlantic, because you can bank on the 7,000 fuel dealers that will take bioheat to the street, to the consumer, to probably really become enamored with all the unique products in the soybean community, such as degreasers and solvents, paint strippers. You have countless products that are green that can be integrated into the fuel dealer network. And I declared yesterday at the summit meeting that will be phase two of my personal vision as a representative of the National Biodiesel Board to take your products forward. And we will not fail you, and we do appreciate the opportunity to serve you guys.
Paul, thank you very much. That concludes our opening remarks for the teleconference here this morning. Again, for those of you on the telephone, just hit #0 to ask your question. Again, before asking, if you would give us your name, affiliation, and if there is an individual here that you would like to address your question to. Our operator this morning is Debbie. Debbie, good morning. And do we have any questions from the telephone this morning?
There's one coming in right now. I'll get them and join them for you. One moment.
Thank you.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for this news conference. Susan Windsor from the Corn and Soybean Digest. I wanted to verify that this could mean 450 million gallons annually of biodiesel fuel increase in demand. I want to get that figure correct. And then secondly, are there any transportation challenges of getting the biodiesel from where it's manufactured to the points in the East Coast. Sometimes we hear about that with ethanol, and I understand that compatibility is not so much of a problem, but I'm just wondering how it would be transported. Thank you.
This is Paul Mazzaro, National Biodiesel Board. On your first question, I would suggest that the 450 million gallon number is accurate, but understand that the heating oil industry is predicated on weather, and I don't think anyone from the soybean world or the heating oil world can control the weather. We love cold winters. It means a lot of volume. So weather controls that number exponentially, I would say that. In regards to how we move product from the west to the east, it's been done, you know, for years. At this point in time, we're talking rail and truck, and there's a high level of confidence that that, you know, demand could be met throughout the seasons. Pipeline activity is still underway at the National Biodiesel Board. We have a pipeline, a steering committee. Where we are with the pipelines right now is we're still working towards helping them understand how to measure what they call in their business trail back, potential contamination of the biofuel on their pipes. And the aviation industry does not allow any, as you know, ethanol or biodiesel on these pipes. So our team is working tirelessly to work with that pipeline committee to put an end to that, and that will be a hurdle that we definitely have to get through to expand the fuel on a more ratable and economically attractive basis.
One thing on that, to 400.
There is a definition for bioheat. The definition for bioheat when we set forth several years ago is the minimum of a...
So, John, I'll put you in the queue for asking your question.
751. Where we are right now, as you learned yesterday at the summit meeting, NORA has aspirations to go to 20% ASAP as fast as possible, because the government intervention is pretty oppressive with us on carbon intensity, and we've determined through our own analysis that if we can get to a B12, a B15, we can then compete with our biggest competitor fuel, that being natural gas. So it's in the best interest of the National Oil Heat Research Alliance and our new partners here in the soybean community to work towards the goal to get to the higher blend. Once you get to the higher blend, the floodgates open up and the volumes would be very, very large.
Debbie, do we have another question from the phone?
Yes, I'll open the next line. Thank you.
Yes, hello. This is John Davis with domesticfuel.com and agwire.com.
Yeah, hello. This is Gary DiGiuseppe, Arkansas Radio Network. My initial question's already been answered about transportation, and I think my second one partially has as well. I was going to ask about quality issues, whether you have to maintain a tighter level of quality on biodiesel than biofuel heat than you do in biodiesel, what sort of parameters there are.
Interestingly, it's a duplication of effort. All these fuels, as biodiesel has its own specification, ASTM 6751. Diesel fuel, generic diesel fuel, is ASTM 975, and home heating oil is 396. There are provisions now that we amended ASTM to include up to 5% in home heating oil and diesel fuel. So B5 blends, up to B5 blends, fall under the standard ASTM standards 396 and 975. Quality is like a paramount importance to the heating oil community. They suffer from fuel deficiencies now. They're just inherent in the heating oil business. Biodiesel will improve upon those characteristics, as I said earlier. So all the fuel wholesalers that will take biodiesel into their terminals will be watchdogs to make sure the fuels prior to blending are all on spec, and then once put together remain on spec for a satisfactory consumer use application.
And if I could add one point to that, the heating oil industry is also moving towards an ultra-low sulfur diesel blend with biofuel. That is the ultimate goal of the industry nationwide. The current sulfur content in traditional heating oil is around 2,000 parts per million. We are looking to move towards a 50 part per million and hopefully a 15 part per million over the next several years. When combined with biofuels up to B5, we have an incredibly clean fuel. And the specifications on the ultra-low sulfur diesel also are compatible, highly compatible with a B5 blend.
And for those of you on the telephone line, that was Michael Ferrante with that second part to the question. pound zero on the phone line if you have a question to ask. We do have a number of folks here in the room with us in Boston. If anyone here has a question for our panelists this morning, by all means, jump right in here. Mike Corso does have a microphone, so be sure to raise your hand and we'll get you called on. Debbie, do we have another call?
So this is Debbie. Were you waiting for another line opened?
Yeah, do we have another question?
Yes, we have several in the queue. I'll get the next line open for you.
Fabulous.
Hello, this is Tyler Zelli with Beyond the Bean magazine, and I was wondering how much potential does soy have to become a major feedstock for the bioheat industry?
Could you repeat that question again?
Yes, how much potential does soy oil have to become the major feedstock or a major feedstock of for the bioheat industry?
Paul Mazzaro, National Biodiesel Board. That's a fair question, but one that's going to be met by who's manufacturing on-spec biodiesel and how competitive the price is. The reality in the game is you have to remain competitive with all feedstocks. I will say up here in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic corridor, soybean oil is the desirable oil because of its favorable coal flow characteristics. And there may be a cost offset by buying soy because it has more favorable cold weather characteristics. Therefore, we're not going to have to massage the product's cold flow parameters, which has a value tied to it unto itself. So I believe, I can't give you a percentage, I don't know that, but at the end of the day, soy will have a role in the entire picture.
Debbie, another question?
Yes, we have more questions. I'll get the next line open for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Andrea Johnson, Minnesota Farm Guide and Farm and Ranch Guide. So I'm not too far away from Joel Thor's route. So Minnesota's wet today. My question today is comparing the Minnesota mandate for B5 in our fuel versus the Massachusetts mandate. Could someone compare those and explain the compare the similarities and the contrast?
Well, this is Paul Mazzaro again. Having spent a lot of hours in your state capitol during that legislative hearing, I was part of that with Steve Howell from the NBB and all our staffers. The contrast is relatively simple. Diesel fuel is diesel fuel, whether it's in Minnesota or Massachusetts. So from that standpoint, they're identical. Maybe the language in the mandate may not be, but that's the fuel we're dealing with, is diesel fuel. The uniqueness to Massachusetts is that we're including home heating oil. And the home heating oil is probably the twist in the whole thing, because heating oil is treated differently. And so that's where Mike Ferranti mentioned earlier in his opening comments, we are having some hurdles here in Massachusetts because of the heating oil. But they're pretty identical. We face the same issues in Massachusetts as we as a team face in Minnesota. Import-export, product coming over the borders into Minnesota. How are you going to make sure that the bio is in that fuel coming from a surrounding state? We suffer the same thing here. We have to manage that. Fuel quality, same situation. So pretty much everything is the same situation, except we have home heating oil in our mandate language.
Andrew, just for your information, it is a beautiful day in Boston, Massachusetts. Hate to rub that in if you're having some bad weather there. But Debbie, we're ready for another question.
All right, I'll open the next line. One moment, please. John, I'm opening your line. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, hello. This is John Davis with DomesticFuel.com and AgWired.com. My question is, this seems to be predicated on the fact that you're going to get some bioheat or biodiesel mandates out there. What do you say to critics who say that there shouldn't have to be a mandate to make this viable?
This is Michael Ferranti with the Mass Oil Heat Council. I think what our industry, the oil heating industry, is willing to accept and admit is that we will take either a mandate or a voluntary approach to embracing biofuels and ULSD. We're not afraid of mandates. I think we have shattered that lobbying and legislative approach. In this case, a mandate is beneficial to us.
That may not be the case in other state capitals and has become an issue as biofuel laws start to move through those general courts. You know, in Rhode Island, for example, there is discussion around a mandate, and Connecticut just recently passed a law that is a mandate, but contingent upon what we do. I guess, in essence, we view this product shift as so important that we are willing to accept mandates or a voluntary movement by our retail heating oil companies to embrace this fuel.
I'd like to add to this question about Palmazzaro. It was brought up in a summit meeting we had yesterday with industry leadership on both sides that it's all about tax incentives and mandates. And I respectfully disagreed with one of my own petroleum industry leaders because market contraction is like a mandate, because if the heating oil industry does not move into this bio element, and they already are, you know, let it be said and let it be written that there's over 240 retail home heating oil dealers that have adopted bioheat in way of taking the trademark that we established not too long ago. There is a registered trademark for bioheat, and it flies on many oil delivery trucks today. So this is not just something that's starting next week. People are already selling biofuels, biodiesel, bioheat. But to the point, market contraction, in my estimation, after 30 years in the oil business, is the number one reason why the heating oil industry needs to make this move. So whether there's a mandate, whether there's not, whether there's a tax incentive or whether there's not, there's market contraction. Natural gas is absorbing market share at the speed of light. Bioheat mitigates that market share loss. So that's the third leg on the stool. Market contraction drives bioheat.
Michael, can I ask, who were some of the champions in your legislature that helped you get this through?
Governor Deval Patrick actually was a champion here in terms of leading the first in the nation proposed legislation back in 2007. Had a very aggressive environmental agenda, including some other utility work, and the biofuel mandate was part of his arsenal, and I think that has set the tone. The word spread to Washington. Our Congressman William Delahunt was very supportive of the movement, and others have fallen in lockstep. I think on the national level as well, we could see, and this springboards or furthers the question that was asked about mandates, it's possible that over the next year or so, you would see a congressional move towards a cleaner burning fuel for home heating, or meaning a bio mandate at the federal level. There's nothing pending right now, nothing drafted, but it wouldn't surprise me if the momentum doesn't shift to Washington.
Joel? If I may comment, Joel Thorzud, on that. We saw in biodiesel that Minnesota first came out with that 2% biodiesel mandate, and I live in North Dakota, and we've never had a mandate there. You mentioned mandates to the legislature there, and they want nothing to do with it. But I'm glad I live close to Minnesota because it's made biodiesel available for me. And Minnesota's example of making a mandate for biodiesel kind of led the nation, showing that it can be done and be done successfully.
Debbie, do we have another question?
Yes, I'll open the line for you. One moment, please. Michelle, go ahead with your question. Michelle?
Must be time for a market report.
Yeah, I don't know. She put us on hold. Other than Michelle, I didn't have any other questions on hold, so I don't know if you want to wait a moment for her.
Yeah, go ahead. We'll go ahead and take a question from here in Boston.
Sounds great. Thank you.
I have Mike back in the back.
Scott McFarland from Dedham Energy, also longtime member of the Mass Oil Heat Council.
Chairman of the board.
Yes, happy to be chairman of the board. The question is for Paul. I definitely hope that we get to the 20% level plus ultra low sulfur within the next 5 years. The question is, when BTU content and effective power in diesel trucks, when we're at 20%, do you have any figures on what the BTU, do we have to increase our nozzle sizes and boilers and things like that? do anything with the diesel engines?
Well, on diesel side, we've had road experience. Tom Berry can attest how many millions of miles of on-road experience with biodiesel. No one's ever complained about BTU deficiency costing them fuel economy. Has something to do potentially with the density of biodiesel versus distillate fuel. So we haven't seen mileage penalties like in the ethanol community. They definitely see mileage penalties. Fast forward into our world and home heating oil, Dr. Tom Butch has done a lot of work on the higher blends. We're not seeing any deficiencies or net losses on efficiency, combustion efficiency because of BTU differential. So we have to take into consideration what the blend is and what it depreciates. You know, in our world, it's about 138 to 140,000 BTUs, you know, versus kerosene's 118. So it's not going to be a compromise. And if it was, I could build a case why all the benefits that the biodiesel delivers to the home heating oil market, it would be a mute point.
Debbie, do we have Michelle back on the line yet? Or another
let's
question?
Try her again for you. There is another question if we can't get her. One moment.
Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we couldn't get Michelle, so I'm going to get to the other question. We'll go back to her later.
Okay.
Hi, this is Andrea Johnson again. Could you talk a little bit about heating oil? Who uses heating oil? Is there a certain, does it tend to be a rural population? Does it tend to be a product that would be used by people who have less resources? And would there be subsidies to assist with bioheat?
Heating oil crosses all kinds of boundaries in terms of its use. Its primary use is in the home sector. In Massachusetts alone, we have about a 40% market share. Those homes range in size from your average household to very large homes. Very high efficiency systems for both home heating and hot water production. So they are architecturally designed to handle the load of any size home. There are lots of commercial applications as well. For space heating, manufacturing as well, so it is a fairly large and profitable market. The other competitive home heating fuel, of course, as Paul mentioned, is natural gas. And that profile for home heating oil is the same around the New England region, in New York, and in Mid-Atlantic, where there is literally billions of gallons of heating oil sold. So it is a very dominant fuel, very well-liked fuel in terms of the industry's culture. Very service-oriented, family-run businesses who truly know their customer base.
Paul, do you have anything to add?
Not on that note.
Okay. Another question from here in the room, or Debbie, do we have another one on the phone?
Well, we only have Michelle. I'll try her one more time for you.
All right. Another question from here in the room in Boston?
I'm Parks Wells from the Tennessee Soybean Office, and I have a question for Joel, or asking for a comment. As the demand for the bioheat increases and it increases the demand for soybeans, what does that mean to the world for the protein that will be added?
The soybean oil that will be used will not use up the protein part of it. As we increase the demand for soybean oil, it'll increase demand for more soybeans to grow on, and should increase the availability of protein for livestock feed or for human consumption of the protein.
Another question, Betty?
Yep, I think we've got Michelle now. One moment, I'll try her. Here's Michelle.
Go ahead, Michelle.
This is Michelle Rook, WNEX. I apologize. I had to run off and do a radio report here quick. And this question may have been asked in my absence, so I apologize. But what is the cost comparison with this using bioheat versus some of the other sources for home heating fuel, as is in the case of the biodiesel industry, with biodiesel being, you know, not as competitively priced or higher priced than petroleum? We've had this problem here with the blender's credit and not being able to blend it now because of the higher price. And so is that an issue that we're going to see with this?
I'll take a stab at that question. Paul Mazzaro again. Incrementally, I don't know where the market is right now in home heating oil on the street side, but incrementally a 2%, 5% blend, if soybean oil was $3.50 a gallon, I think it nets out to a couple of cents a gallon incremental cost. It's not a major league turnoff. We've done consumer focus groups. NBB has come into Waltham, Massachusetts just a year ago, and one of the questions that Jessica Robinson and I posed to this group of people was, you know, what's your threshold level of increased cost for this favorable fuel called bioheat? And given the benefits that they saw in the fuel, they were willing to ante up 4.5 cents per gallon more for a new improved fuel. They saw the recognizable benefits. So I don't see the home heating oil business, unless things get totally out of whack on the commodities market, I don't see home heating oil pushback because of the increase in cost. The benefits way outweigh the incremental cost. Unlike the diesel community, which I've been a part of for many, many years, everything's measured on what we call in the business points per cubic gallon, not pennies, points. So two different markets. I mean, price sensitivity is real, but nevertheless, home heating oil is a unique fuel unto itself. And unfortunately, it's in 23 states, the bulk of it in New York, Massachusetts, Maine, Connecticut, and New Jersey. That's where the high volume is, which is actually good in logistics, which was brought up earlier. We're no longer crisscrossing the country with rent cars and transports. Now we're focused in on a very tight demographics in the country, which is probably overall will help the efficiencies on transportation.
Michelle, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. Thanks.
Thank you. Debbie, do we have another call?
At this time, no more questions.
Any questions from here in the room?
I have another caller coming in.
All right, go ahead.
Are you ready for the caller?
Oh, we are.
Okay, go ahead, Susan.
Good morning. Susan Windsor from the Corn and Soybean Digest again. I have several questions. I missed the spelling of George's last name, please, if I could get that one more time. Secondly, is there any news on the front of aviation fuel using biodiesel? I understand they are experimenting with that. Perhaps it was KLM. And does that mean anything for this market? Are they related at all? And then what are the relative economics of a gallon of natural gas delivered to the heating oil retailer versus a gallon of bioheat? Thank you.
Paul Mazzaro will take the aviation question. There's nothing on the horizon. The only thing with the aviation industry does not want biodiesel ethanol on pipelines for contamination purposes. I personally, on behalf of MBB, have not enough legwork on the aviation industry to answer that question. Mike, you might want to take the one on the natural gas to clear up that.
I want to spell your name. Horsrud is Thorsrud. On the heating oil versus natural gas, I think over the years, heating oil has had a price advantage up until the last 2 years over natural gas. Without getting into the arcane formula, it really is important to compute the BTU value of heating oil versus natural gas. Just for the record, heating oil has about 140,000 BTU per gallon, and a therm of gas has 100,000 BTU. So consumers using natural gas get 40% less. Nonetheless, the economic advantage of natural gas has posed a competitive challenge for us, and that is one of the reasons why we need to alter the chemistry of our fuel and the overall marketing of it, because we are at a price disadvantage. Prices will vary depending on the price of crude. I'm talking heating oil now, and prices for natural gas can also fluctuate with the same vagaries that impact our industry, whether it's a storm in the Gulf Coast or a conflict in the Mideast. So, but we see pricing as a key part of our competitive landscape here.
Debbie, do we have another question?
There are no more questions at this time.
I think we have a question here in the room.
Yes, Donald Rehagen with the National Biodiesel Board. And I was thinking the listeners may enjoy learning a little bit more about how the relationship between the biodiesel industry and the home heating oil industry came together, how these two industries are working now to in support of each other. So maybe some comments about that?
Well, that's a great question, one that we'll talk about in about 25 minutes or so across the hall. But the two people on, you know, Michael and I actually, I brought Michael to my home office, which was in the basement of my home some 8 years ago, when I had this idea of integrating biodiesel and heating oil. This is actually a true story. And Steve Howell was in town, the technical director for NBB. Michael had some chemical background. He was with Monsanto, so we weren't speaking to someone that didn't understand the language of fatty acid, methyl esters, and all. But I shared this dream with him, and he captured it. This guy's been running by my side for all those years. Today, we're going to have a capacity crowd next door, 215 people. We actually had to turn people away from this conference, which is the first in the history of the industry. But it takes me back to the bottom line of, and everything has a bottom line, the power of your soybean checkoff program is enormous. For 14 years, you've been supporting Advanced Fuel Solutions, which is the petroleum liaison for NBB. Without that soybean commitment, the funding has been, it's invaluable. You were compensating me to go tell your story. Your story is coming today to this room and to that room there. This is very important. Those investment dollars were huge. Holistically, you've grown the business with a $60 million investment over years to a 700 million gallon world from, I think it was 24. So the soybean checkoff dollars has been invaluable to the oil heat industry. And now, in a sense, it's embarrassed some of the higher-ups in the petroleum industry to get off their rump and follow suit. This partnership thing is a marriage made in heaven. And Mike, I mean, comment on it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just proud to have done it. I don't consider myself a visionary or a pioneer. I just saw a market opportunity. I was impressed with Paul's abilities. I believed in this fuel from the very beginning. So I've been happy to carry the mantra and the message. We did utilize some National Oil Heat Research Alliance funds in 2005 to fund the first study on the combustion characteristics of soy-based biofuel and ULSD. It was actually an 80-20 blend, 80% ULSD, 50 part per million, with a 20% blend of soy-based biodiesel. And the results were remarkable. So I was sold prior to that, but after seeing the results of that study, I was convinced that we should move in this direction. So I'm just happy to have grown to be a partner with Paul and the group that is here today, and I think that synergy is really, it's going to grow even further.
And one last comment on investments on the oil heat side, not to underestimate their contribution as well. Mike alone last year diverted $900,000 of his NORA money in his state to create an unbelievable radio campaign. And beyond that, I believe I was talking to John Huber last night, and we believe collectively, you know, NORA with all the advertising and stuff has been pushing some $4.5 million over the last couple of years. So they're promoting bioheat. And the reason they're not aggressively promoting it is because it's not in every terminal. We're still growing. The title of our campaign, for the record, is Baby Steps. And we have a small baby with little green shoes. And it was basically to explain visually that we're taking small steps to get where we want to go. You can't take major lunges, major giant steps, because you have to have the infrastructure in place. The last thing a fuel dealer wants to do is go commit himself or herself and not have the fuel to sell. So chicken and egg. So,
Joel, let me ask, from a soybean farmer standpoint, as one of those that is investing your checkoff dollars, how does it make you feel sitting here hearing the comments that these two gentlemen on both sides of you just made?
It's very exciting for me. It makes me anxious to want to go back home and tell others we need to grow more soybeans. In the past, when there's been food versus fuel debate or price of groceries, and we say, well, price of our product really hasn't been raising the price of groceries, and we get this message told mostly in the Midwest. I don't think we get it out east here very much. Here's a great opportunity for us to tell our story, and they can see the benefits of our products, and it's a great chance for us to work together with the Midwest and the East.
Debbie, do we have another question?
There are no questions at this time.
Any other questions from here in the room?